EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, Senator.
Ares 31, me neither.
Or 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And if there was anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago.
Or 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Something. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Emergency 1095. Yeah, something just passed over us. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. So yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Same airplanes.
And it is dispatch.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
Four calls.
Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, Bob, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. We have an interesting witness account coming up. We have Olin, an avid outdoorsman and hunter from Minnesota, and he had a sighting of a craft when he was a child. And as he got older and spent a lot more time in the woods, he started seeing some very strange things. And on a camping trip in 2016, he heard what very much could have been a Sasquatch. Olin up next. I'd like to welcome Olin from Minnesota to the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Appreciate you coming on, man. Now, you had a sighting back in 2000 of a saucer.
Yes.
If you'd like to start there and just walk the listeners into it for us.
All right. When I was 10 years old, we were at my grandmother's house for dinner on a Sunday. It was during the winter. We started heading home in the car midday. With my father and mother in the front seat. And then I was in the back seat with my brother and sister. I was sitting behind the driver, which would have been my father. And, you know, obviously my parents were just looking straight down the road as my dad was driving. My siblings were in the back seat, you know, playing on a Game Boy, and my sister's reading a magazine. And I was just staring out my window. A metal craft, like a saucer, like a just like basically the stereotypical flying saucer you would see just in popular culture. Like, and it was metallic. Whole thing was just a shine, like stainless steel almost. It just kind of like, it didn't just appear. It flew in so fast. It was just like a quick blur, and it did an instantaneous stop. It was floating above the field, probably maybe 75 yards away from me, and it was about 50 feet off the ground. It sat there and hovered, but did like a little tight triangular type motion as it was kind of floating there. It sat there for about 5 seconds. I just stared at it, and my jaw was to the floor. I didn't even, my brain was just so focused on it, I didn't even think to say anything. I would just stare at it and stare for about 5 seconds. And then it just took off and just was gone in a flash, just as fast as it appeared. My brain, my 10-year-old brain, it kind of just shut down after that. And I didn't want to look out the window anymore. I stared at my feet the rest of the way home, and I didn't say anything. I started questioning my sanity a little bit, wondering if I'm going crazy or something. And I didn't even think about telling my parents or my siblings, because I didn't want, you know, just kind of how people are, you know, where I live here. It's, you talk about crazy stuff like that and you're just going to, you know, get laughed at. Nobody's going to take it serious. So I just figured it was better to keep it to myself and, you know, not talk about it with anybody. And that was pretty much it. That was the first incident that happened. And then nothing happened for like many years. I kind of just lived with that, kind of put it in the back of my mind. I didn't talk about it. I didn't even think about it too much. Every once in a while it would pop up in my head and then I'd go, no, that's crazy. I just suppressed it. But when I turned about 14 years old, where I live here in Minnesota, that's the first year that you can hunt on your own. You don't need an adult with you to hunt. If you're under the age of 14, you got to be hunting with an adult. It's how it is. But 2004, me and my friend, we started hunting together. We do coyote hunting at night. So in the winter, when there's snow on the ground and there's a full moon and it's a clear night, it illuminates the landscape and you can see coyotes. You can also see, you know, see anything else that's out there too. Or we would go out on dark nights with a light. And there was several times where we would see strange lights streak across the sky. When I mean streak, go, but they're not flying in a perfectly straight line. They're kind of bouncing around like a ping pong ball. And it's kind of one of those things too, where if your eyes weren't looking at that part of the sky at that second, you might not, you know, catch it. Happen so quick. It didn't seem to be a shooting star or satellites, because I've seen plenty of those out hunting at night too. It appeared to be like flown. It's really hard to describe how, but they were odd. It was surreal to see these things every once in a while. And I didn't think about it much. But as I got older, I started doing more and more hunting, you know, by myself. You know, friends and stuff, they wouldn't always be up for going out and going for a coyote hunt. And I would want to go, so I'd just go by myself. I started seeing more and more of these as years went by. I call them orbs because they appear to be light. They don't appear to, like, in the night sky, it's dark. I can't see perfectly. The lights just seem to be light. They didn't seem to have anything physical behind them. There's two different types I always notice. There's these red ones, and they would be, like, from the best I could judge on my depth perception, but they were close. It would be about the size of a beach ball, and they'd be just this, not a bright, vibrant red, but kind of like a dull, almost like reddish, kind of had an orange tinge to them. And the light seemed to be self-contained. They wouldn't cast a ray down on the ground or appear to light anything up. It was a light, but it was self-contained in its own space. And that's the, I don't know how else to describe it. It didn't seem to just, you know, cast light. And those would be slower moving. They would fly and kind of almost like how a shark's tail moves, kind of side to side as they went along. They seemed to be under intelligent control based off just, there's one incident where me and my girlfriend would be driving home. We lived out in the country at the time. And we were driving home and we saw one of these red orbs kind of flying across the sky, maybe 100 feet in the air. And it appeared to be close and appeared to be going over like the trees from like a farm site and stuff like that. And we could tell it was really low in the sky. It was kind of floating around in that weird formation. And we started following it on a gravel road. And as we started kind of catching up to it a little bit, it's almost as if it noticed us following it. And it sped up a little bit, like maybe went twice the speed it was going. So like if I were guessing, like maybe like 40 miles an hour or something. And it floated all the way over to these wind turbines that we have kind of out where we used to live, you know, for electricity, wind farms. And it floated over there and it stopped at the same height as the red flashing lights that are on the top of these tall wind turbines. And almost seemed like it was trying to blend in, like it knew we were following it, and it kind of went over there quick to try to blend in with all the red flashing lights, but it was not flashing. It was a solid light while the other, you know, towers, lights around it were flashing. And it was also, you know, not the same color. It was more that dull reddish orange type color. And I saw these probably dozens of times while I lived out there. Another notable incident was when I was out bow fishing. We have a lot of carp and stuff, and they're considered an invasive species. They were stocked in our lakes, you know, like a century ago, as like a food source, but they kind of rut and muddy up the bottoms of lakes, and they choke out some plant life because they can't get enough, you know, sunlight, and then they kind of mess up and habitat for native fish species, and they'll eat walleye eggs up and stuff. Another thing I do at night is I go bow fishing for carp, which it's a bow and arrow with a reel and a line attached to an arrow, and you just shoot carp and reel them out and pull them out, and then you just find people who like smoked carp, which isn't me, but the DNR needs them out of the water. Me and my girlfriend were out bow fishing one night. Well, I gave her the bow and arrow and gave her a few tries at a few fish. I was just looking up at the sky. I saw a red orb floating almost directly above us, and it seemed like it was maybe a couple 100 yards maybe up in the sky. And it was there was some kind of low clouds that night. It was kind of moving around and in an erratic fashion, but staying above us generally. It was kind of dipping in and out of the clouds. And then it disappeared into the clouds and we never saw it again. But that incident lasted maybe 30 to 45 seconds. It's just another strange time. Another incident out at the house. My girlfriend's mother was out there and she went outside by herself to smoke a cigarette. And she said she saw a meteor fly over her head and it landed in the field. And we're like, well, did it have a streak going behind it? What do you mean it landed in the field? We didn't understand what she was talking about. Like, if a meteor hit out in the field, we would have heard something or felt something when it impacted. It doesn't seem right. But then the more we asked her questions and the more description she gave us, they started realizing it was one of those red orbs she was talking about. She said it flew overhead, you know, relatively slow. She said it was like a dull red. And I'm like, yep, that sounds about right. She said it was completely silent. And that's a thing I forgot to mention, too, is every time I've seen any of these orbs, they're 100% silent. I've never heard any sort of noise, you know, usually with a drone. A lot of times, like when people have drones and stuff, you can hear them. You can hear them humming, you know, up there. These are always dead silent. And I don't know why anyone would be flying. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And there isn't people flying drones, you know, that I know of. And I've seen drones fly, too. I know what they look like. And this is, you know, something completely different, especially the way it could fly and then the way they could just disappear and stuff, too. Sometimes they would just kind of fade out of existence, like right as, you know, on the spot they were floating. And, you know, I saw I got to talk about the white orbs, too. There's white ones I've seen too, not as often as I've seen red ones, but white ones, they'll be at higher elevations. I've seen maybe about three of these. And they'll appear to be going across the sky, just like you could see a satellite on a nice clear, you know, night. You can see you'll be able to see a satellite up in space and it'll follow a straight, singular path across the sky from horizon to horizon. You can watch them almost the whole time they, you know, cross over you. These would appear to be doing that, except they're more bright and eye-catching, and they'd appear to be going in a straight line, and then it would stop, and it'd be really odd, and you just sit there and watch it for a little bit. They would always take off up and away from me, like up into space, and they would fly in these crazy, they would accelerate instantaneously. They would do these 90-degree turns without slowing down. At such high speeds that, just imagining, you know, your general concept of how physics work, like, it seems like if there's a human inside there or someone operating that craft, that the G forces on those turns would just turn your insides into mush. Just mind blowing how fast they accelerate, how fast they turn at sharp angles, and then just seemingly just scurry away off into space and out of sight. And they're just completely odd. I the few people I have told about this in my life, I always try to mention that, you know, it's a UFO isn't necessarily mean it's like an alien, you know, spacecraft or something. It's an unidentified flying object. And that's exactly what they are. They're weird. They do things that defy my understanding of, you know, physics. But at the same time, I don't know what they are. All I know is they're strange and they're weird. And you kind of get a sense of eeriness when you see one. Kind of don't want to be outside anymore. You're like, oh man, I should probably just go inside now. Gives you kind of an ominous feeling just seeing something that's not, you know, normal. And then in 2011, it was probably the most intense experience I've ever had in my life. I had a friend with me. We were 21 years old at the time, and we had gone to a town like 45 miles away from home to go visit some other friends that were living up there. Driving home at about 1:30 in the morning, and we were about halfway home out in the middle of the country, and it was a drizzly, dark night. One of those nights where if you're driving on blacktop, it's like your headlights reflect off the blacktop, and it's just, you know, it's harder to see the road. It was early summer. The main point is it's middle of the night and it was very dark. So I'm driving, my friend is in the passenger seat, and as we're driving along, all of a sudden the whole landscape lights up, and immediately I thought, lightning. Sometimes a really bright flash of lightning will kind of light up the landscape momentarily. But once the landscape lit up, the light didn't shut off. And my mind is like, you know, well, what's going on here? And so I look through past my friend and out of the passenger side window, I can see this giant ball of light. And it's got a kind of a green, it's mostly whitish light, but it did have a bit of like a greenish tinge to it. And it was extremely bright. Like a lightning flash, but staying on. Then my heart started pumping. I thought, like, because this thing was the size of like a sports arena or a sports stadium. It was huge. It was a couple hundred feet off the ground, and it seemed like it was ginormous, like larger than anything I've ever witnessed in my life. It was so huge. And, I'm freaking out. My first thought is it's a nuclear bomb going off, and we're seeing the flash now, and in a moment we're about to feel it and hear it. And I'm freaking out, and I say to my friend, you know, what the hell is that? And he says, I have no idea. And he's kind of chuckling a little bit, like, what is that? I'm driving, so I'm like glancing at it, but I got to keep my eyes on the road. And it didn't even cross my mind to stop and pull over. I just kept driving. I didn't want to stop. Like this is just going on for, you know, like 45 seconds now, this light. And now I'm looking at the road and all of a sudden it's like someone's got a strobe light on. If you're in a really dark room, you know, and a strobe light's going off, it kind of makes your eyes bug out a little bit. Like kind of like you just keep blinking because it's kind of messing with your eyes a little bit. It was kind of having that effect on me, and I was kind of just blinking and trying to stay focused on the road, but I didn't want to stop. And then all of a sudden, I look out his window again at it, and it's kind of like almost rotating with beams of light coming out of it, and they're strobing. Like a snap of a finger, it just went instant acceleration straight up, and then it went dark. And it was like almost like the light was so intense that it was like someone, the light didn't just immediately disappear. It's like someone, you know, moved a dimmer switch down fairly quickly. And then it went back to normal. And this whole time too, completely silent. We didn't hear a dang noise, nothing. And then we are both kind of fumbling over our words, and we're like, what was that? And he's like, I have no idea. And you know, we can't think of anything logical of what it could be. And he said that he's like, it was like a mothership. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I don't know how else to describe this thing either. It was just monstrous. Like I said, the size of like a sporting arena, but it was floating up in the sky. And then it let off this intense light and immediately accelerated and went off into space without making a sound. It was extremely intense. That's not one I usually tell talk to people about, because it's just unbelievable. It doesn't make any sense, and it sounds too incredible to be true. Me and him will talk about it every once in a while, but he doesn't like to talk about it too much. I'll talk about it a little bit, just kind of, you know, refresh our minds on the memory. But if anybody else is around, he'll straight up deny it. He doesn't want to talk about it with anyone other than me. And the only reason is because I was there with him. Then, that pretty much does it for UFOs. That's exactly what I chalk them up to be. They're just unidentified flying objects. I have no idea what they are. Done research on, you know, aerial phenomena and trying to understand, you know, maybe what I'm looking at. I mean, that's all they are. They're just strange, unidentified flying objects. Moving on to Sasquatch. Like I said before, huge into hunting. I'm also big in the outdoors in general. I love camping. I love fishing. I love going four-wheeling and ATVing. And there's this place in northern Minnesota where we go every year to go four-wheeling. It's a state forest, and there's lots of four-wheel trails that run through it. There's a good, primitive camping sites, no electricity or plumbing. It's out in the middle of the woods. There's no power lines that run out there or anything, no plumbing, no nothing. It's just you and Mother Nature and these four-wheel trails. 2016, we've been going up there a few years. This was in early June. We had been there all weekend, and we always like to stay in camp there a couple extra days into the week, because it's usually pretty busy up there during the weekends, but most people have to be back to work on Monday. And we'd stay Monday, Tuesday, sometimes in a Wednesday, just to get a few days of, low traffic and kind of just having the whole place to ourselves, you know, before we went home. So we were camping there, and there was nobody else in the state forest but us. All the campsites, main forest road that runs through the forest, and all the campsites are off that road, and usually take that road and go up and down it, because if you need to get out to the road to take a trail, you can go to town that way, or if you go the other way, it brings you to the lake. And all the every day you kind of know if people are there or not. And on a Monday, there was nobody there. We were camping, just sitting around the fire that night, and about half the group had gone to bed. There's four of us still up, myself, my girlfriend, her mother, and then a family friend of ours. It's like 1:30 in the morning, and it was probably pretty close to the time where we were all gonna pack it in and go to sleep for the night. But it was really nice out. It was really just dead calm, no wind, kind of cool, clear skies. You could hear some barred owls, and there's frogs and crickets going, just nice ambient night sounds. And we're listening to the barred owls, and I'm guessing, because it's, you know, the forest at night, I don't know how far away it was, but it was close enough where if I had to guess, it was within 100 yards of us. And it let off this impossible to mimic sound. It was like a howl and a scream at the same time, and it sounded like almost like 20 things doing the sound at once in unison. But at the same time, you could tell that it was just one thing out there making noise. It was just the most bizarre, odd howl slash scream I'd ever heard. It lasted 30 seconds ish. It was so loud, intense, and powerful. I've never heard any animal or even human being having a set of lungs on them that big to make that much noise and sustain it for that long. This wasn't a faint sound heard off in the distance. This was close, and it was loud and very powerful. After the sound subsided, everybody at the campfire is looking at me and like, what was that? And I said, I have no idea. I haven't a clue. Been hunting in northern Minnesota my whole life. I've never heard anything even come close to that. And my girlfriend's mother said, this sounded like space apes or something. It was like a symphony of space apes. I said, and she's like, I don't know how else to describe it. And I said, that's better than what I can do, because I don't know how to describe it either. But that's probably the best description that any of us could think of, is when her mother said it sounded like a symphony of space apes. And that wasn't the end of how odd it was either, because as soon as the sound or this vocalization ended, the crickets, the frogs, barred owls went dead silent. There was no wind. You couldn't even hear a leaf rustle. It was just dead quiet. And look at my dog. It was Australian cattle dog that I bring with me coyote hunting. I don't use him to fight coyotes or anything barbaric like that. He's just, he sits with me. He usually spots coyotes before I do. He's more attentive than me, apparently. Usually if you call on a coyote, if they see your dog, they don't even pay no attention to you. They're just upset that there's a dog. You know, they're showing up for a dinner bell, and there's already a dog there. Coyotes, you know, they don't like dogs. So he'd sit with me, and he was just a useful tool to have with me coyote hunting. But he, if he sees a coyote, he goes nuts. If he hears coyotes, he goes nuts. He's Mr. Tough Guy. He's an Australian cattle dog. They're pretty hard-nosed dogs. They're pretty tough. They're pretty fearless. After this ended, I look at my dog, and he is crawling under my chair, and he just laid his head down on the ground like he was, couldn't be more disinterested and wanted nothing to do with whatever that was. And then a sense of dread kind of came over me, which has never happened, because when I'm in the woods or I'm hunting, I'm comfortable. I'm not scared. I'm not afraid of wolves. Wolves aren't going to hurt you. They see you, they run away. I'm not afraid of bears. Same thing. Unless you surprise one or something, if they smell you or they see you, they're out of there like a flash. They don't want nothing to do with people. I'm not afraid of the woods. There's nothing to be scared of if you just do everything you're supposed to do and be smart while you're, in the outdoors. But this fear that came over me made me immediately want to go and lie down in my tent and hide under, the blankets, go hide in my sleeping bag. I didn't want to be outside anymore. I didn't want to shine my light into the woods. I didn't want to see what was making the noise. And always camping, I was armed too. I had a Glock 20 10 millimeter in the tent with me. And I didn't feel safe still. I felt like I didn't have enough gun with me. And I just didn't want anything to do with it. I just wanted to close my eyes, go to sleep, and just be done with it. And the best way I can describe the fear that came over me was it was just deep, deep fear. This fear that was like a memory in my genetics. Like there was something, from the past that still lives in our DNA that says, hey, whatever that is, you don't want anything to do with it. Just avoid it at all costs. And the next day, we all got up, and obviously we're talking about it again while we're cooking breakfast on the fire. And the rest of the group that wasn't awake is like, what are you guys talking about? And we kind of told them what happened, and they all started rolling their eyes, and they're like, oh, you guys are up last night, concocting a story to mess with us today. And we're like, no, we're serious, but after that, we kind of just dropped it because we didn't want to talk about it, or try to convince them all day. But the next day when I got home and I had internet access again, I immediately just started scouring the internet, trying to figure out exactly what I had heard, went through all the animals and birds in Minnesota, listening to vocalizations of those, and I was coming up empty-handed. This was hitting a lot of dead ends. There wasn't anything that was ringing any bells, and nothing, like, I wasn't really, I don't know of any animal that can be that loud and powerful, even though, like, wolves are, they can be, you know, they can howl pretty loud, and coyotes and stuff, too. This was, like, you know, four times that on the power and noise level. I just kept searching. I started Googling things like what sounds like an ape in northern Minnesota. And I, you know, Bigfoot things started popping up in the results. And so I started listening to Bigfoot vocalizations, which I had never done before in my life. Before this, I held the attitude that, oh, you know, I'm an experienced hunter. I'm an outdoorsman. Anything that exists out there, you know, I know about it. You know, I kind of almost had a, you know, looking hindsight, probably had a little bit of a arrogance about it. I know what's in the woods and I know everything about the woods, but it's not the case at all.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
So I came across some, started listening to Bigfoot vocalizations, and then I came across a few that sounded a lot like what we heard, just not as powerful because it's a recording and not the real thing. And it's not the typical, you know, Sierra sounds or the Ohio howl or anything like that. This was more like monkey screams mixed with like kind of, you know, like whooping and like a howl. And it's really hard to explain. One thing that, you know, I've thought of is like any animal out in the woods, you can kind of mimic what they sound like, maybe not spot on, but if somebody asks you, what does a wolf sound like? You could howl and make like a wolf sound to kind of demonstrate what they sound like, or even a whistle to make a bird sound, or try to, you know, there's nothing I can do with my mouth to make the sound that we heard, let alone just the power behind it and the how long I was able to sustain that power and volume as well. And the more and more research I did, the more and more, you know, Sasquatch didn't seem like it was such a silly, you know, thing. Because before that, you know, I'd seen some like, you know, Bigfoot stuff with Finding Bigfoot, and it's like, oh, this is just a silly show. Or when I was a kid, you'd be in the grocery store and you'd see those tabloid, you know, headlines, those fake ones, you know, like Bigfoot had somebody's baby. But that, in my mind, that's kind of just what big, you know, or beef jerky commercials, you know, Bigfoot or Sasquatch was just kind of a silly thing that didn't exist. And if it did, I would know about it. The more and more I dug into it, the more and more I started realizing that this is probably what I'm dealing with. When things are bullshit, they fall apart pretty easily under scrutiny. But the more I dug and got deeper and actually spent time like looking into it and reading it, the more I started realizing that there's a lot of people that are just like me. Since then, I've been kind of obsessed about it, even more so than the UFOs. When I started seeing UFOs, and then, you know, you go on the internet and look at that stuff, but it's so like hard to tell if it's, you know, real. You know, UFOs usually don't leave footprints behind. They don't do stick structures and stuff. Bigfoot seemed a little bit more, I suppose I'll throw a pun in here, down to earth, because they're, you know, they're leaving footprints. Like, it's hard to, something that just is up in the sky to leave evidence of it being there. Nothing's happened since then until just this October. We went on a, you know, late season four-wheeling trip with me and a couple of coworkers of mine. And we just went up there to four-wheel camp. It wasn't Bigfoot related at all. It was just go up there for a night, do some four-wheeling, come home. My coworkers, you know, weren't really in on, you know, what my experience was or anything like that. They're not people that have ever experienced something like this or like are even really into it. I mean, one of them I'm pretty good friends with, and I've mentioned a few times about Sasquatch, and he's just kind of like, yeah, you never know. He's kind of nice about it, but he's not really into it. But we were four-wheeling. We're just going down a trail, and it was actually my friend that said, hey, look at all these. He likes, you know, he was ahead of us. He stopped. He's like, hey, look at all these. I'm like, what? And he's like, all these, like, tree things. And all around us, now all of a sudden it's clicking in my head that, holy cow, he's kind of right. These trees that have been broken off, like a tree break, 7.5, 8 feet off the ground, not just from weight or something pulling down on it, because if you grab the end of a tree and pull down on it and try to break it, you know, it's going to have a long splinter. This was more like a break that something had grabbed 7.5, 8 feet off the ground, grabbed it and gave it a twist with its wrist and just broke it there. It was a nice break. No splintering going down the tree or anything. It was just a nice snapped off break. Like how we could snap a little twig like that. It was snapped like that, except much larger scale. Dozens of these large logs propped up and kind of made into like almost like a teepee formation. Things wedged in the like a tree will grow two different directions, like a crotch of a tree. There'd be a tree in between that with a root ball in the air, except the root ball wouldn't be sitting above like where it tore out of the ground. It'd be perfect level surface, and this root ball's in the air wedged between the tree. And not only that, but the root ball had sitting in the air, and then the limb going down where it's in between the two trees, it wasn't just resting in there. It's almost as if something pulled it apart, dropped that tree in, and then let go of the, you know, the forked tree. So it was almost like it was clamped in there. They were in there so tight and so far wedged into like the crotch of this tree that it was impossible for us to, you know, pry it out or get it out or anything like that. And then another notable one was this tree that was probably about 50 feet long, like a whole tree, and it's woven. It's on its side, perfectly parallel with the ground, and it's woven through the forest in between trees like somebody was knitting a sweater and just woven and suspended perfectly level with the ground in the air about waist high. We tried pulling around and monkeying with that too, and we couldn't get that thing to move. But it was in there so precisely and so tight that it was just, you know, it was impossible. I suppose one could argue that machinery could have done this, but usually machinery leaves evidence on the ground, like tread marks. And usually if you're picking up stuff, you're going to have some tool marks, like on the tree where you have a chain connected or a clamp gripped into the tree to lift it with any sort of machinery. That was very odd on its own. Our camp is actually only about a mile from there off this trail. We went back to camp that night. We had a few like instances where it felt very eerie. And then we'd hear something plop in the water, like just a little pebble. Well, we start looking around. We're like, oh, maybe there's like, you know, something dropping acorn, you know, a tree dropping acorns. You know, it's just falling off the tree. It is, you know, October. So we couldn't find any sort of oak tree or anything that's dropping acorns or anything like that. We're like, well, it's got to be something just, you know, falling out of a tree. But then we start hearing a few other things kind of whiz through the trees, kind of whiz and kind of hit the dead leaves that are still, you know, hanging onto these trees. They just hit, you know, the leaves haven't fallen, and it would hit, and we could kind of hear its path as it flew through the air, and it was coming from the woods and kind of flying over our heads through the trees. It was really odd. We, you know, hung out around the campfire a little more. Me and I had one friend, he was just sleeping in his truck. And then me and my other friend were in our own hammocks. We were just sleeping in hammocks that were hung in a tree with a kind of like a little tarp lean-to over us in case it rained. As we're laying in bed, it's probably a little after midnight, and then I start hearing something heavy kind of tromping through the water. It wasn't a quadruped. It was two distinct, like, footsteps, like tromping, one, two, not kind of like a patter, you know, a pattering sound that, like a, something on four legs would have. It was odd and it was freaky. We talked about it a little bit the next day. And, my friend said, you know, with those things we saw yesterday and the kind of the weird stuff happening at camp last night, he goes, you know, maybe, you know, there might be something to that. And I said, yeah, well, I'm like, you can look into it, but you're not really going to find any answers. You're just going to find a lot of, probably about 80% the stuff I found, you know, just, you know, it seems like just silliness. And you got to really dig deep if you're trying to look into this subject to actually, you know, find some things that are interesting and have some substance to them. That concludes all the strange occurrences that have happened in my lifetime.
Okay, I'm going to play a bit of audio that Olin said was the closest he found to what he had heard that night. Olin didn't record it, nor is it recorded in the same location. I have amplified the vocals.
Oh, no, and it took us about half a tank of gas to get up here. I don't know if we had enough to get back. I guess, what do you think we should do?
We might have to ask one of the people who live around here to see if they have this for gas.
All right. You do it? What?
Something else.
I was thinking Planet of the Apes, man.
What do you think it was?
I'll know. We're going to send down to my friend down in San Diego. He'll analyze it. There ain't no monkeys out here, man. There's no monkeys out here. At all.
Yeah, just to clarify, it wouldn't be my audio. It was just the closest thing I could find to what we had heard. Guess it's not the typical Sasquatch vocalization that people hear, which makes it seem even more, you know, kind of unbelievable. But, you know, I'm sticking with the facts. I can't alter the story to fit other people's, you know, narrative or what would be expected. You know, it is what it is, which is apparently an odd vocalization, even for a Sasquatch.
And if that's what you've heard, that's what you heard. I think you can safely say that there's no deer or coyotes throwing pebbles or stones.
No, you got to have hands to pick up and throw stuff. And like it was high in the trees. Like even if an animal could kick, you know, up some rocks, you know, they're not sending rocks sailing through the trees over camp.
This second location, is that the same location as the first in 2016?
It is, actually. And it took me a few years to actually kind of want to go back there. Like, I was kind of freaked out, honestly, to go back into that area. So it was that 3 years it took, about, you know, 3 years and a few months before I went back. But it was within, it wasn't at the same campsite that this happened. I would say that from the first location to the second location, it would probably be about a mile as the crow flies in distance. So it is relative, not the exact same spot, but relatively close to where the first incident had happened 3 years prior.
How remote is it?
The closest town would be 15 miles to the east, but you got to get out of the forest first. Like you got to drive all the way out on this, like a low maintenance road. It's a forest road to get onto this county road. And then you got to take this county road, you know, 15 miles or so to the next town. And it's just a tiny little town that has one of those, you know, it's like a gas station and grocery store all in one type of things. And, you know, it's a pretty small town. The closest, like, significant town would be about 35 miles or so.
So it's a good enough location, really, for anything to be living unchallenged.
Well, and here's the thing, too, about the location. So the area where, on the first incident where we heard the vocalization, the area that the vocalization was coming out of would be the opposite direction of where any sort of, where the road was. Back in that area, there's four-wheel trails that kind of go back there. But it's really rocky hills. And then the low areas are these kind of swamps, you know, with like duckweed floating on top and cattails and lily pads and stuff. I've actually tried grouse hunting there. And I gave up after an hour just because the terrain was hilly. It was steep enough. It's not like really huge, giant hills, but they're just these rolling hills that are just, they're steep. They're up and down. And there's rocks everywhere, you know, rocks that are like the size of your head. So if you're trying to walk through there and try to find a grouse, you know, to shoot, you're not even looking for grouse. You're staring at your feet the whole time, trying not to roll an ankle stepping on a rock, or not trying not to knock down a rock and have it roll down and, like, you know, break your ankle. It's really tiring to walk through there. You can't walk through the swamps. It's muskeg, and there's, you know, feet of muck at the bottom of these. If you step in them with, you know, chest waders and stuff, if you don't keep moving and keep your momentum going, you can get stuck in them pretty easily. It's pretty treacherous to walk through. So I'm just having a really hard time imagining somebody out there in the middle of the night to somehow make this sound, which is so out of this world and crazy and loud and powerful, to do it once and then call it a night, you know, just to mess with us. Plus, like I mentioned, there's nobody else camping there that night, because it was a week night. Most people, you know, it's pretty slow during the week and in camping areas like that.
I kind of look at it like if you have someone that encroaches on your property, you know, where you live, you're not going to want them there, are you? So that's the way I kind of look at it. You know, when people are getting stones and noises, it's just basically because, you know, you're in their home. That's the way I look at it. So I'd probably, yeah, I definitely suggest if you ever do go back, even with someone else, definitely take a sidearm.
Yeah, I actually didn't the last time. We were only going up there for like 2 days, you know, and I'm like, well, you know, I'm not too worried about what are the chances of something, you know, it's going to happen twice, you know. I should know better by now. But yeah, it was just one more thing to pack. I didn't feel like bringing it. I wasn't too worried, you know, about anything attacking me. I think a lot of times people get really paranoid, like a little over the top, like even with like coyotes and stuff, people think, you know, coyotes are going to attack them. And it's like, well, I mean, it has happened, but it's so rare. Every coyote I've ever encountered in my life, if it sees you, it smells you, and then it figures out you're a human, they're gone like a flash. They want nothing to do with you. Same with bears. It was October. I wasn't really too worried about encountering a bear. Plus, I don't know, our black bears seem to be pretty good at just steering clear of us. They don't, every bear encounter I've had, we just have black bears. We don't have, you know, like big grizzlies or anything. We just have like these shy black bears. They only get, you know, they're around 200 pounds maybe. The really big, big males can get, you know, upwards of 800 pounds. But those, you know, those are really rare too. Be lucky if you saw one that big. So, you know, I didn't pack one because I don't know, I just wasn't worried about it. It's just one extra thing to pack for just a day trip, and just left it at home.
I know, I'm not sure about Minnesota, but I know there's thousands of encounters every year in the States, up and down the country. You know, a lot of people just believe it's the Pacific Northwest, but actually it's pretty widespread.
It is, and I think there's actually a culture thing that kind of plays into it a little bit, because, I mean, as you know, the United States it's really big. Each region, people, you know, aren't the same. Everyone has their own, like, little subculture. Out on the West Coast, they get a lot of sightings and stuff like that. And it's because they have really great habitat for Sasquatch out there. Those, like, you know, temperate rainforests in the Pacific Northwest, they're thick, they're vast, they're huge. So it would make sense that there'd be a lot of them out there. But people on the east or on the west coast tend to, be a little bit more open and not, especially when it comes to Sasquatch, people can talk about it a little more openly in that part of the country. It's part of their culture. For the most part, I don't think you get called a whack job if you've said you've seen a Sasquatch. Up here in Minnesota, it's quite the opposite. People aren't so willing to, be open-minded about something like that. That's something that's out of the realm of, normal in their eyes. People need to see it to believe it. And I think a lot of people around here, if they see or experience something like that, I think they kind of keep it to themselves for the most part. On my quest to try to find answers for the Sasquatch question, because it's become a big part of my life. Just trying to understand what they are exactly, because I'm not so sure it's just like a lot of, just an ape, or it's like a relative to human, or, it's an alien dropped off by a spaceship, or, it's interdimensional. Everybody has all these theories of what they are, but I don't think anyone really knows. And until I really know, I don't really want to sit here and talk about what they are, or, or try to understand, or I don't have the answer to, what they are. And I don't want to pretend like I do either. But talking to some people, because I've, met a few people on the internet from my kind of area, and I've talked to them before about their experience. And there was this one guy from, lived right on the other side of the Canadian border, or Western Ontario. He told me about his Sasquatch experience that happened in 1981. And he said, I was the first person he talked to about it since it happened. He said him and his girlfriend saw the Sasquatch next to a lake at a rest site. And he told his brother about it. His brother laughed at him. And from 1981 until this year, 2019, he didn't speak about it with anybody. He talked to me about it because, I was just real genuine with him, and, came across him and said, I just want to hear what happened to you, and I'm not going to judge you, because, I've had some weird stuff happen to me as well, and I don't want to be judged as well, but it helps to talk to people about it and try to understand, or at least have some camaraderie with people, because it's not everybody that's experiencing the strange wonders that happen in this world. It kind of seems like it's just a few small percentage of people that have this happen to them, and a good majority of the rest of the people just get to go throughout their lives and get to be completely oblivious to what's actually going on out there in the universe and in this world as well.
Absolutely. Totally agree with that. So how do you plan to pursue this now? Obviously, you have an interest in finding a little bit more information about it.
Yeah, me and my girlfriend, we tried kind of starting this like Bigfoot, reporting system. We were trying to kind of, advertise on Twitter, Reddit and stuff, and try to find people, not even just in Minnesota, but in Wisconsin, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, Iowa, Ontario, and Manitoba, kind of this around the Lake Superior region. I mean, I did it for a while, and I got a good burst of reports at first, but as time's gone on, it's really slowed down. I'll have some people, a lot of times, I think a majority of the time, someone will email me, and they'll just give me such a brief, description, and be like, and I'll email them back. If you want to talk about it, I'd love to talk about it with you. And then I even ease them. I'm like, I'll even talk about, my experience and stuff, so you can, you know, hear from me. I'm not here to make fun of you or anything. I just want to hear your story. And then I won't hear anything back. It'll just be dead air after that. You know, it's gotten so slow that it's just kind of petered out a bit.
So what do you have? Have you got like a website or anything?
We just have a email address. So we'll just go on Reddit or Twitter and kind of have an account for the email address. And like, if you've had an experience, email us at glsasquatch@gmail.com. And it's just for people that have had a Sasquatch experience in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, Western Ontario, and Manitoba. Just kind of this region of the country. And the reason why I was interested in that is because it's, you know, where I live, and there's not a lot of information for these areas. I know people are seeing and hearing Sasquatch, but nobody wants to open up and talk about it. We're like the least noticed like region of the continent here as far as like Sasquatch goes. And I think it has a lot to do with the culture of, if something weird happens, you better just keep it to yourself. Otherwise, everyone's going to make fun of you and think you're a weirdo. And that you'll just be known as that guy. Every time you walk out of a room, oh, that guy thinks Sasquatch is real. You know, everyone, he thinks Bigfoot, you know, is actually out in the woods. You know, they'll tell people that. And then you get people not liking you. Like, a guy's a freaking weirdo. Don't talk to him. It's kind of a big thing. And I just think, people just don't, in this part of the country, don't want to talk about it. Keep to themselves. We got a lot of Scandinavians and Germans that settled this area, so we're all descendants of them, and they're kind of they like to keep private and be more reserved and stoic, I guess. They don't like opening up and blabbing too much.
I'll put a link in the description, so anyone that wants to contact Olin, email him. If you live in the Upper Peninsula, Minnesota,
Wisconsin, Iowa, Western Ontario, and Manitoba.
And you're on Twitter as well?
Yeah. That would be same as the email address, GL Sasquatch or Great Lakes Sasquatch. For the most part, it's not, I do this and it's not for me. I don't do this. So I'm not trying to get some Bigfoot fame going or trying to sell any sort of t-shirts. This is strictly for, I know exactly what it's like to experience crazy stuff. It's kind of hard to talk about. You try to describe it happens, you feel like you sound like a nut job the whole time you're talking. We're not looking for any of that, making funny or anything. We just want, it helps to talk to somebody. Something like that's happened, I want to hear it, and I want to let you know that I've been there myself, and it's kind of hard to navigate through. So it's more of a support system than trying to get famous off of Bigfoot like so many people try to do these days.
All the Bigfoot TV shows, and that's exactly what they are. They're just TV shows.
Yeah, it's just filler stuff, and it's just supposed to be kind of silly and fun. But if something has actually happened to you, it's not very silly and it's not very fun, honestly.
Yeah, I'd imagine. I mean, it's very scary. Just going back to the sighting you had in 2011 with the bright, intense light.
Yep.
Could you make out any form at all?
A ball of light. And if it was anything solid matter, actual like a craft, it was basically camouflaged by the intense light that was coming off of it. It was like a bright ball of green electricity. My biggest struggle with all these things is they're so strange and otherworldly and just like surreal, but they're really hard to put into words,
So was it a bit like plasma, like a sort of like a plasma effect?
Yeah. Almost kind of those little plasma lights, kind of, with a bulb, you can win them like, in school or whatever, and you're a kid and you touch them and they kind of like tingle your finger a little bit, it was like that, but green, kind of like that electricity, plasma-y, but just incredibly intense and huge and unbelievable.
And your friend, that was there with you?
Yeah, I told him that I was going to be doing this and talking with you. And I did ask him, I said, do you want to write down, since you were the passenger and you got to watch it the whole time, do you want to write down exactly what you, you know, saw? And I'm like, I won't share your name or anything like that. Just the description of, you know, what you witnessed. And he didn't want to. So
yeah, that's quite understandable.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing your stories.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
No, you're more than welcome.
All right. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Well, that's all we have time for today. If you enjoyed the show, just give it a quick share. And if you've had an encounter, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. I will be back next Monday. Stay safe and have a great week.